Hello, welcome to my podcast, Stories at Will. Thank you for finding me. My name's William Lewis. We round off series two with two stories about writing. Roger Dimkins tries his hand at it, not entirely successfully, in Roger the Writer. Roger Dimkins tapped the dottle from his now cold pipe, smoothed the crumpled flannel of his trousers, adjusted his sports jacket, and walked around the room again, the fifth time that morning. Taking another turn around the room, he could not escape the realization that his many attempts to transform himself from third-level walk-on parts to lead characters in narratives had met with no success. He was always the postman who delivers the critical letter, or the window cleaner who first sees the bloodied body on the bed, or the barista who hands the daily latte to the blonde woman who turns out to work in espionage and who uncovers the plot to abduct the heir to the throne. It was better than nothing, but far from the path to fame and glory that he had always longed for. As he paced, clouds of gloom heavy on his shoulders, an idea struck him. "That's it," he thought. "That's what I'll do. That'll work. No longer Roger the bit part player, but Roger the writer. I shall become an author. That way I can always write the best parts for myself. It can't be that difficult." He took off his jacket, slung it over the armchair, rolled up his sleeves, sat at his desk, went back to the jacket for his fountain pen, filled it with a bottle he kept in the third drawer of the desk, took some sheets of A4 from the bottom drawer, placed them in front of him, and made ready to write. But what to write about? Maybe worry about that later. What writers need is a good opening sentence. He thought for a moment, then began to write. Number one, I could tell you about all the characters in the story and what happened, but it still wouldn't be very interesting. Except for Roger, of course. Number two. Before we get started, said Roger, I should just like to explain to you the workings of the gas turbine engine. Number three. So that's all sorted, said Roger, and went to bed. Number four. At the garden centre, the young assistant nodded politely when Roger asked her if the implement she was holding was, in fact, a trowel. Number five. Cycling up a hill, said Roger, is an acquired taste. Not everyone takes to it. He sat back, feeling very pleased with himself. Five possible stories, and he would be at the centre of all of them. He'd never thought it would be this easy. But a voice broke into his reverie. Roger, Roger, said the author, what do you think you're doing? I'm writing, said Roger. No more bit parts for me in your stories. I write my own. Look, see, I've started five already. But Roger, dear, said the author gently, truly, they're not very good. No one would want to read them. It's not enough just to write. You've got to write well. Said Roger, sounding crestfallen. Do you think so? What should I do then? Well, said the author, forgive me for saying so, but they're all chaotic, and they don't seem to be going anywhere interesting. But I'm in them, said Roger. How can they fail? Actually, I'm a very interesting person. Setting that aside, said the author quickly, why don't you try genre? Then at least you'll have a clear style to be aiming for. Maybe fantasy or magical realism or crime, travel maybe, or memoir, you know, that sort of thing. Maybe you're right, said Roger. All right then, I'll give it a go. He thought for a few minutes, then picked up the pen and began to write again. Late on Thursday afternoon, as the sun was lowering in the sky, Roger walked into his pretty garden and sat beside the pond at the far end. He heard a rustling sound behind him. Was it a mouse? No, he knew very well that sound. He looked round, and there was Caspar, his favourite dragon. He knew that several dragons lived there in the trees around the pond, but Caspar had always been his favourite. They usually liked to fly in the early evening. Some people saw them and thought they were bats, but Roger knew they were dragons. "No, Roger, no, no, not dragons," the author's voice broke in. "Karen writes wonderful dragon stories. You wouldn't stand a chance beside her. Best try another genre." Roger picked up a fresh piece of paper and wrote, "When they finished wallpapering the lounge and rodding the drains of the cottage, Roger and Milosh got into the car and drove to the brothel in Budapest, hoping they wouldn't be too late, this time, to rescue the fair Valentina." "Sorry, Roger. No, that won't do. Linda's nearly 5,000 words ahead on that story, so you're probably best to leave that one to her. Have another go." Dawn arrived with a warm embrace, like greeting an old friend after the rigours of the night. Roger folded his cloak of invisibility and made himself a cup of herbed tea. He'd felt honoured to be given the special powers, but with power came responsibility and the mission to visit sleepers and turn their nightmares to dreams of delight. Wasn't always easy, even for a superhero. "Not a bad opening, Roger." Once again, the author's voice broke in. "But, well, magical realism, that's Di's area, and frankly, no one can touch her for that level of imaginative writing. How about memoir? Surely you could do something with that." Roger sensed that he was coming towards the end of this particular road. Maybe writing wasn't for him after all. But he was nothing if not tenacious. He'd start with a title this time. Life, Love, and Laughter, A Boy Growing Up in the Forest of Dean, by Roger Dimkins. Pat Gazy was the prettiest girl in our class in the forest. All of us boys fancied her. She was so clever too, went to grammar school, while the rest of us stayed local. If there was ever any fun to be had, she was always at the centre of it. But if you saw her in church, in her hat and Sunday best, you'd think butter wouldn't melt in her mouth. I often wonder what became of her. "Very nice, Roger, very nice. It's got an authentic feel about it, which is good. It's just that, well," the author paused, "Pat is a writer. She's written lots of marvellous memoir about her life in the Forest of Dean, and she is a published author too. Her books sell by the thousand, you know, in the UK and internationally. So I think you'll need to find another area. Sorry." Roger sat back and closed his eyes. This just wasn't working. At that moment, the phone rang. "Roger, this is a casting call. One of our top authors is going to write a book about some kind of virus that infects the planet. She's looking for a lab technician who works in the lab where they're racing to make the vaccine that saves everyone. Unfortunately, their vaccine doesn't work, and another company gets there first. But the part's probably there for you if you want it. Wednesday, 10:30, usual place. Oh, and bring a white coat, and do try to look scientific." Roger looked at his watch. The morning had flown by, and what a morning it had been. Maybe he wouldn't be a writer. Maybe this part would finally lead to something. It was nearly 2 o'clock, time for lunch. He walked into his kitchen and made himself his favourite sandwich, ham and cucumber on white sliced bread, thinly buttered, of course. He cut them into tidy triangles and, with a cliched sigh of contentment, sat down to consider his future. In our final story of series 2, Stephen finds some surprising inspiration to cure his writer's block. It's called Room for Writers. As Stephen settled down at the writing desk by the window, he wondered whether this place would help him break his writer's block. But time passed, maybe half an hour, maybe an hour, and the page remained blank as he gazed at the sea, the beach, the cliffs, and the sky. Absorbed in their stillness, he couldn't shake off the stillness, the lethargy inside himself. He stared again at the page, then looked up, preparing to see the void stretching in front of him. But this time, a figure was standing there in front of the window, her coat buttoned up against the March wind. Her shoulders shook slowly. She appeared to be laughing, but then he realized they were deep, heartbreaking sobs. As he watched and pondered, great gouts of yellow and white seagull slop appeared on her hair and down the back of her brown corduroy coat. Stephen grabbed a kitchen roll and ran out to help her wipe it off. Her eyes were red from crying, and her cheeks were streaked with mascara. But she smiled and thanked him. "Must be a lovely view from that room. Do you live there?" "No," said Stephen. "I'm renting it for a couple of weeks. I'm a writer, but a writer with writer's block. I thought it would be a good place to get some ideas."
"And have you?"
"Not until just now, when I saw you. I thought maybe I could do something with your grief on the cliff path."
"You're kidding me," she said.
"No, really. I think it could work quite well."
"I didn't mean that." Her face hardened. "You leech, you vampire, you're preying on other people's misfortunes just to invent your silly stories. Here, take your kitchen roll and stick that in your story."
"It's not really like that," said Stephen. You, she said, "you parasite, you make a living from other people's misfortunes. All that crap about character and conflicts and neat resolutions or not. Look around you. What do you see? Why do you have to pimp on this stuff? No one cares. We're just trying to do the best we can to get off with our own lives. Why can't you? Why can't you do something useful? Why can't you be a gravedigger, a bus conductor, an orchestra conductor? I mean," she said, "something useful, you parasite. Just leave me to my pain and sort out yours, Mr. Blank Canvas, okay? Just sod off."
"Hmm," said Stephen, putting down his pen and closing his notebook.
"I think that'll do." Hope you enjoyed those two stories. Thank you for joining me on this podcast adventure. We'll be back again in autumn 2024 with Stories at Will, Series 3. This is William Lewis, looking forward to reading for you next time.